Good morning, everybody. Probably time to get started. My name's Jim West. I'm the Enterprise Architect Manager from the Auckland Council, and presenting with me today is Abhinath, who's one of the Enterprise Architects with me in the team. So just before we start, if anybody was expecting to find out something about good architect, bad architect, the person presenting it, Miha, is unfortunately in an aeroplane at the moment, I think coming from Australia. So, no, he's not actually going to make this presentation. So you're quite welcome to sit here and work out whether we're doing good architecture or bad architecture, but I'm not going to give you any hints over here. Okay. So what we wanted to talk to you today a little bit was about enterprise architecture at the Auckland Council, some of the challenges that we've got to address and the ways that we're actually trying to address it. So I'm sure many of the people in this audience actually come from Auckland. So, you know, some of that may be sort of close to your heart. What I'll do to start off with it, I'm just going to go over sort of how we got to where we are. And I said, Abhinath will just take us a little bit of where we're going, and then we'll have a wrap up at the end. So first of all, I originally was thinking that I'm going to say, man, what a problem we've got. But it's not like that at all, is it? You know, architects don't really see problems. They really see opportunities out there. We've got this massive opportunity. The Auckland Council is the biggest startup organization this country has ever seen. And it really is a startup organization. So let's sort of have a little bit of a look at how we got here. So in 2007... the government set up a royal commission to go and have a look at Auckland governance. So there was a general feeling that things could be done better in Auckland, so they got some people to go and have a look at it. And they came back with some recommendations, and they did suggest some significant changes, which is why the Auckland Council exists to this day. And there was a couple of key things that they really suggested that we needed to do. One was we needed to get better governance. Now, that was both at an organizational level and at a political level. And Auckland was a big city. Surely there's better ways to leverage the scale and scope of what we've actually got here. So those were some of the key drivers for it. The government took on board everything they said, and they created some legislation. They created the Auckland Transitional Authority, or the ATA. So the ATA existed for 18 months, and its sole purpose was to bring together all of the regional bodies, the regional body and the local bodies together into one organization. So basically, at the end of their tenure, the Auckland Regional Council was done away with, and the seven local bodies. So that's Auckland and Manukau and Papakura and Franklin and all of those. So he's got eight organizations all coming together. Now, what the Auckland Transitional Authority did was it didn't try to fix all of the problems. All it did was enough to bring everyone together. They had 13 different work streams, 13 different kind of projects, and information services was just one of those 13. So the things that they really wanted to do is they wanted to make one organization, one people organization. So obviously there was an HR stream that went forward. And the information services, what the focus of that was to put some key platforms in place to make sure that 1 November, which was the date that the Auckland Council had to start, everybody could answer the phone, they could phone someone else in the organization, they could send an email to somebody else in the organization, they could interact with each other. So we had some core capabilities that we needed to put in place. They also put in place some core enterprise capabilities, some ERP capabilities, a single general ledger system, some consistent HR systems across there because it became one team. So that's what the ATA did. And in order to control what they were doing, they kind of put the brakes on what those eight local bodies were doing during that time. So, you know, they had to keep on doing, those eight local and regional bodies had to keep on servicing, you know, their citizens. But they kind of had to use the ATA as a governance sort of piece. So, as you can imagine, a lot of the projects that were running there, they ran their course, and basically everybody was waiting for the Auckland Council to start. So what we've also got is all of this, everything was focused up to then, but it became a new organization. So what we also had was a whole bunch of legislative or mandatory outcomes. So one of them was the 1st of November. You know, that was when the Auckland Council was going to start. There's no way as a project manager could stick his hand up and say, I'm having a bit of a problem here. You need to give me a little bit more time. You had to do it. And there's been a couple of other pieces of legislation. One of them you may have seen recently, a single rates invoice. So you don't get a local rates invoice and a regional rates invoice. It all comes into one piece. So, you know, the IS team was obviously part of that. And thanks very much for paying your rates, because it, you know, sort of ends up in part of it in my pocket. But thank you for that. A whole bunch of in-flight projects. Now, the ATA, when it was operating, didn't finish everything. You know, it started a lot of pieces over there. So the Auckland Council had to live with, you know, a lot of those in-flight projects that were happening over there. And we're going to cover some of the business and IS challenges that we've got. Now, coming on from that, what we need to do is work with the business and IS vision. So vision is, it's one of those interesting things. The purpose for the Auckland Council is to help the mayor and all of the councillors and the local bodies achieve their vision. So our purpose is to make sure that the representatives of Auckland are able to achieve their vision. So we have more of a purpose than a vision, but we do internally have to work towards some things. We've got a whole bunch of risks that we need to manage. Bringing everything together was a whole bunch of risk. And as I said, a lot of what was happening in the local bodies kind of came to either slow down or came to a stop. And then when the Auckland Council started again, obviously, you know, the demand never really goes away. Okay, so the council is quite complex. It's the Auckland Council is a tier one organization. We're of the same size of the Fonterras and Telecoms of New Zealand. Okay, we operate 24/7. You can, in fact, phone the council at 3 o'clock in the morning if you really want to. Okay, we have got $29 billion worth of assets that we need to manage on behalf of the people of Auckland. There's a broad range of services. So it says, you know, it's a broad range of services and business units with little overlap. You know, the council, all councils are very similar, is that it's almost a series of almost discrete business units that are operating together with the common purpose of meeting some customer needs. But you can think of it, the guys operating the parks and looking after park benches, and the guys out there doing rates and building inspections, they're quite different often. You know, and you've got a library group over there, very different people doing very different jobs. So we've got these quite distinct different units going throughout the organization. And IS underpins almost all of those. Okay? It's what we're trying to show here is any council is very much an information-centric organization. It's a services-based organization, and it uses information in order to be able to get those services out to its stakeholders, which really are the citizens over there. We do a lot. It really is quite a high volume business, as we said over there, you know, over 1 million emails a day. You know, there's quite a lot. Some of that obviously is internal. You know, a lot of phone and customer interactions via email, 10,000 building inspections a month. You know, you bring all that together and it becomes a very complex place to actually work in. Now, just going to some of our challenges. In terms of enterprise architecture, what we're trying to focus on is not just the technology. Enterprise architecture is about assisting the business in order to make it more effective. Okay? So we're trying to work with the business to improve their business planning and performance. Okay? So enterprise architecture doesn't define it, but we're certainly working with as many business units as we can to give them what assistance we can. The team that I look after includes the solution architects as well as the enterprise architects. So we need to make better quality and more effective solutions. Okay? So the enterprise architects really need to help shape what it is that we're going to be doing. And then the solution architects get in there and they really create those solutions that is going to enable the business to actually do the things that they need to do. And return on investments. So all those people who live in Auckland are probably pretty keen on making sure that the Auckland Council is spending its money well, that we're investing in the right places. As you can see, we had $29 billion worth of assets over there. A lot of the money that comes into the council is just spent on maintaining and managing those assets. It becomes quite a complex exercise in trying to work out where the prioritization is for the organization to actually focus its funds to get the best result out there for the citizens of Auckland. Okay, so what we've got here on this slide is we're trying to show you that we've got 8 operating models. When the ATA came and created the Auckland Council, what they did was they created a couple of couple of layers that went across the organization. So in terms of customer interactions, anybody who needs to interact with the Auckland Council can pick up a phone and phone one particular number. That's great for all the people out there. But the reality of it is, behind the scenes, you've still got the same teams operating. If you live in the North Shore and you want a building inspection done, you'll probably have a guy that has been doing building inspections for the North Shore for some time. Okay, so we've got all of those legacy services. If you have a look there, the bylaws for all of those, we still have numerous sets of bylaws, numerous sets of policies. The ATA didn't actually bring all those together. Those are going to get brought together by around 2015. It's going to be quite a complex exercise in doing that. So we still have some differences across the region that we need to manage on an ongoing basis. Okay? The processes are still somewhat different across the area. We haven't managed to bring all the business processes together. It's being worked on, but, you know, some of the systems are quite disparate over there. All the people in Manukau, their information is in IT systems that were run by the Manukau Council. We haven't had the opportunity to bring that all together. And as you'll see, that's a really huge scale problem to deal with. What we do have is we have a consistent set of people across the organization. So if you're dealing with building consents, for example, there'll be one manager that's responsible for running the team that has got all of the inspectors involved in that one. So we have created consistent teams all the way across, but they still have to deal with all of these different systems. So what we're really using is a lot of smart people inside the council. When you phone up and you say, I'm from so-and-so and so-and-so, they may have to go onto that particular system to work out how to solve you. And then the next phone call could come in from a different part of the city, and they'd have to use other IS systems to actually enable them to work with you and to sort out whatever it is that you're asking for. Coming down to the next layer, we do have a number of shared service functions. So when the ATA created the Auckland Council is not the only organization that reports to the mayor and to the councillors. There's a number of CCOs, or council-controlled organizations. So the whole transport unit was split off, and we've got an organization called Auckland Transport. They look after all the roads, everything to do with transport they do, we don't need to do. There's a waterfront development agency. There's a regional facilities Auckland that looks after things like the art gallery, and it's got a whole heap of other responsibilities. So we are the largest CCO, but we are still a CCO. So you can think of it as a number of organizations that report to the same board of directors. The board of directors is the mayor and his councillors. It's an analogy that's not too far from the truth. So we provide shared services to some of those other CCOs as well. So some of the smaller ones, the Auckland Council provides almost all of their IT services. Auckland Transport has got its own IS division, and they go and do their, they run their services, and yet we've got a lot of interactions between the two of us. So we've got network connectivity that we need to manage. We need to manage shared security. There's all of those low-level technical functions that we need to continually work with. Okay, so just covering some of the business challenges for the Auckland Council. In terms of environmental, what the business has got is a very fragmented environment. So we covered that in the last slide. We've got kind of eight of many things. But we've also got people scattered all over the area. We've got 170 different locations where we've got managed network connections going. We've got another 40 or 50 different locations where we may just have DSL-style connectivity into it. And there's probably even more locations out there where we don't actually have specific network access, where we've got council staff providing services to the people of Auckland. Okay, the infrastructure is, again, we've got a large underlying infrastructure. It covers, a very large area. And we've got ongoing legislative challenges. So one of the ones coming up for us, in 2012, everybody has to be rated on the same basis. So that means, in the past, one area might have been rated on the number of possums that were seen on their street and how many street lamps, and another area might have been rated on how many swimming pools have you got in your area. From July next year, everybody's got to be rated on the same basis. Now, that's not a problem for information services. The politicians need to sort that one out. What we've just got to do is work out when they've made their mind up, we need to be ready to actually make sure that it happens and it's consistent and works for the organization. So we've got changes, legislative constraints on us, and we'll continue to get those. From an organizational point of view, what the business did when the council started off, we really made a conscious decision to make sure that organizationally it was stable. That the focus, especially for the first 6 months, was just trying to make sure that the Auckland Council was stable. It carried on giving services. I think there was a couple of people out there that were waiting for everything to really fall into a big heap and were waiting for failure. And I think that we've done a good job in providing those services out to Auckland. But what we've done is we've consciously made the organisation comparatively stable. That 6 months has passed. We're sort of 9 months into it now. And some of the groups are saying, well, you know, I could actually structure my team better. And we're actually looking at that now. So the organisation's stability is changing now, and that's going to create some pressures onto information services. Preparedness. There was a lot of focus on preparedness for when we started, and that preparedness needs to keep on going as we get new challenges. You can think of the Rugby World Cup. That's something that we've been working pretty hard on getting prepared for. And then change fatigue. The ATA, so I only joined the council on the 1st of November, so I'm a real newbie here, I'm even a newbie at Techhead, to be quite honest. So, but there's a lot of people that actually came all the way through, and that whole transition period was a pretty tough time for people. Most of the people in the Auckland Council, almost all of the people in the Auckland Council didn't even know if they had a job until about 2 months before the Auckland Council started. It's a pretty tough time. And when the council started, I got a lot of sort of feedback saying, oh, it's so good that we're here. You know, we've got over the change. We can just sit down and get on with it. And I sort of had to say to them, I'm sorry that the change is only really just starting now. The challenges that we've got is going to come over a good couple of years. So it's something that the business really needs to be aware of. Establishment. We established the biggest startup organization in this country. Okay? Things like business plans. I said 90% of the people didn't know whether they had a job. All of those business plans had to start getting put in place as of the beginning of November. Okay? So it's been a big challenge for the whole business in order to try to make sure that they're executing to those business plans. It's pretty easy to keep the BAU going, but what's going to happen next month and next year? There's been a large focus on that one. Funding, as I've said, funding is not that the council doesn't have the funds. It's about putting in place the processes to make sure the funds are spent into the right areas, basically to get that prioritization. And it kind of comes with resources, making sure that you've got the right resources to provide the services that we need to do. Communications, so the business challenges is about transparency. One of the things for any local government is trying to provide that transparency of what they're doing. Where is the ratepayer money going? Now, it's pretty hard for the business because we've got all those different processes. If things are happening slightly different in North Shore than they are in Waitakere, it makes it pretty hard to show that transparency because you can't compare apples with apples. So there's a lot of people working pretty hard on trying to make sure that we can provide that transparency through to the politicians and then on to the rest of the people of Auckland. And managing expectations, you know. It's pretty tough. Everybody wants things to be nice and new and shiny and working fantastically from day one. And as you know, it's pretty hard to get there. Okay, so we've covered there's a complex legacy landscape. I wouldn't worry too much about the numbers over there. We've got more applications than we really know how to count. If you look at that 6,500, that's different pieces of software that are installed on PCs across the entire region. It's just way too many. You have a look at it and you say, well, you've got 8 of everything. Well, now sometimes we've got more than that. We've got 28 customer management systems. 28. That means that some of the legacy councils had more than one, and that's not too surprising. As I said, we had different kinds of business units grouped together. There was some sort of legacy vertical applications that were built up over time. One of the key things for the council is looking after assets. When we had a look at where we managed all of our assets and where that information was, and I will admit that we're counting spreadsheets and Access databases, we came to over 300 systems where we had crucial information about those $29 billion worth of assets. So we need to do something in that particular area. As you can see there, even down to 8 data centers. We've got at least 8 of everything, at least. and probably more. Okay, so some of the information service challenges. So hopefully, you know, anybody who looks at this might recognize a bit of COBIT in it. So the challenges for us, some of it was about portfolio management, managing that IS governance. One of the first things that the IS team did was set up some governance around what projects we were doing and what projects we weren't doing. And that was pretty key for us because, you know, you've always got a limited amount of resources. You've got so many architects. You've got so many implementers out there. You've got so many operations staff. You've got to be quite careful about where you're focusing your efforts. So that was one of the key things that we needed. We needed to retain some of our key IS staff. You know, a lot of the information was in people's heads, you know, and a lot of the skills, and we needed to make sure that we tried to retain those going forward in a very challenging environment. And risk management became pretty key for us as well. So when you look at the delivering and supporting side of it, we needed to improve our level of functional knowledge. There was a lot of knowledge that was there, but some of it was in people's heads, some was in files spread across multiple file systems. We've been putting some effort together into trying to bring that together. Organization-wide security was and is a big challenge for us. I'm sure anybody who knows anything about security realizes that you're as strong as your weakest link. And where was that weak link? We've been, you know, working hard on trying to get that. Every time we look at architecting any solution, we look at security right up at the front to try to make sure that it flows all the way down. But it is one of our challenges going forward. Pre-production environments, we had some in some areas. We didn't have in other areas. It wasn't consistent. And that shared services capability that I talked about earlier, where we provide some services over to transport, over to, you know, Facilities Auckland, all of those things is a lot of people weren't in that sort of shared services mode. On the acquiring and implementing side of things, consistent IS procurement, still one of our big challenges. You know, you get out there and a business unit gets frustrated, IS isn't delivering fast enough, and they're out there trying to get something, you know, oh, through the back door, or whatever it is. You know, we've got our challenges there. You know, they go out, they implement it, and they hand it over to IS, and oh dear, okay, we've got to spend a whole bunch of time fixing it. So that procurement, getting right into the front of that is pretty key for us. And you can imagine also from a procurement point of view, we're really interested in making sure that we're getting good value for our dollars. Okay, we need to QA processes is one of the things you need to make sure that we're providing the quality services out. And that comes down to release management and control. So that release change management, how do we get things out into our technical environment? How do we make sure that, you know, the changes we're doing is not going to break things? Fairly standard things that most organizations have to do with it. And I think I've covered knowledge retention already. So on the planning and organizing, it kind of comes back to some of those business things. The IS team had to build up their business plan. The IS team had to work out how their funding model was going to work at. We are trying to make sure that we've got a good view of where we're at. We're also trying to make sure that we've got a good understanding of our information. So we're putting a lot of effort into understanding our information architecture. So the information architecture is key to us because we are essentially that information-centric organization that I talked to you about. And building up some domain standards. Now, we're not starting from scratch in all of these areas. We had 8 organizations. We've taken what we can from those, and we're trying to take the best from each organization and bring it together. But, you know, we've got quite a way to go into getting to those standards. And, you know, some of the people out there are sort of saying, well, we're in the new council. You know, it's somebody else's job to set those standards, and it's trying to make sure that we get the right people to say, oh, stand up, take some responsibility, and I'm going to actually help do that. Okay, so in order to work out where you're putting your money, where you're putting your effort, where you're putting your resources, you really need to understand your priorities. So as information services, we're trying to make sure that we align what we do with the organization's priorities. So if you start right at the top, and it doesn't actually say it on the slide, our mayor's main vision is to make Auckland the most livable city in the world. So that's the very high-level statement that we all work to. Within the council itself, we've got these 11 priorities. Now, 11 is quite a lot, and our CEO, you know, stands up there and quite admits it. He says he doesn't like having more than 4 or 5 priorities at any one time, but this is such a big organization that he's had to basically put some more. So you can see what our top priority is at the moment. What the Auckland Council is most focused on is getting the Rugby World Cup going and working well. Okay, so there's been a lot of effort into that one. I'm not going to cover all of these ones, but a single rating system is the second priority. Now, when we say single rating system, a lot of people think, oh, you guys are going to have to build a single computer system to do all your rating. Well, that's not actually what it means. A single rating system means that we're doing the same thing to all people. So we could put all of the rating into one particular application, or we could apply the same rules over all of the legacy applications we've got and work out what the right time is to do it there. And we haven't quite worked out what the right answer is yet. A lot of these things will be fairly obvious to you. Project Genesis, the internal project name, that's about leveraging the size and scale and scope of what the council does. It's about just getting some efficiencies there, looking for anywhere where we're doing things, any waste areas, how can we cut out waste? So that's what Project Genesis is about. As you can see there, measuring performance, that's the transparency that we talked about a little earlier. How can we make sure that it's visible to everybody out there what it is that we're doing, that you can see our performance metrics? Okay, that's strong and dynamic culture. Culture is an interesting one. It is a startup organization. You can almost think about it. It started off on day one. It had no culture. It had very little of anything. So the senior leadership team have been working quite hard to try to get a culture out there that is what we want. And those leadership teams as well, it's about just that they all started new. The first 6 months was really tough for a lot of the business leaders around the council because they had to go out there, pull together brand new teams, pull together some disparate business processes, and still focus on making sure that they never actually dropped the ball in delivering to the customer. So some of the grand projects that you may hear of is never going to make Auckland the world's most livable city if the council doesn't pick up the rubbish on time, or is not looking after the roads properly, or the library service is down. You've got to keep those standard business as usual processes going. You've got to have the basics before you can get anything that's really grandiose going forward. Okay, so risk and complexity. There's a business view. We've got those multiple operating systems. We've got one organization. We've got to merge those in time. Okay, and it's going to take us quite a while to get there. It's just going to take quite a while. And we've got competing priorities all the time. It's the same in any organization. You've got to be quite careful that you're actually delivering to the organization's priorities and maybe not trying to just, there's a squeaky wheel over there. If I just, give it some love and care, it'll go away and my life will be easier. But it might not be the right thing for the organization. So those are some of our challenges. Technology-wise, multiple technical environments. If it's out there, the council's probably got at least one of them. Really, we've got quite a lot out there. And this latent demand for solutions is another one of our challenges. So what I said right at the beginning, what the ATA did was they slowed down what was happening in all the legacy councils. So that really built up the demand. There was people out there that wanted information services to help them with some challenge, whatever that challenge may have been. But you can't have that. Now that Auckland Council is there, everyone's sticking their hand up and saying, I really would like some help over here. Information services, can you just build me this little web app? Can you do this? Can you do that? So, it's just trying to manage all those expectations. We can't actually do everything for everybody. So those are some of our challenges. What we've got is a sort of project pipeline over there. We've probably got, at the moment, maybe 60 projects concurrently running at the moment. This is a picture of everything else that's coming at us. So we've tried to break it up into some different categories. We've got some specific governance gates going through there so that we can actually manage it all the way through, make sure we don't take on board too much, make sure that we are setting the expectations correctly with the business. And that leads into the need to govern that change. So we've got all of this change coming. If we don't get the governance working well for us, we're going to start failing. So because there's so many people sticking their hands up and there's so much noise out there, it's got the potential actually to slow down even more what we're doing. Somebody comes to information service and says, can you help me with this? And then they don't focus on, there's sometimes other ways to actually do it. Okay? Some of the reasons for governance is the implications. So as an example, you might have had a team in one particular location and they wanted to co-locate with a Waitakere team and they wanted to co-locate with a North Shore team. And they said, okay, we're going to move over there and we're going to take all of our physical records, all of our files. Hold on, who else uses those? Oh, right, there's that team over there. Oh, yeah, this move is a bit more complex than we thought. So we need to make sure that we actually continually work with the business so that they understand some of those ones. So that's not really an ICE example, but it is an example. So one of the first things we did was set up a governance group to try to make sure that we were making the right decisions there. Okay, so that's just a little bit about what the challenges are, a little bit of a business overview, a little bit of from IS. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hand over to Abhinath now, and he's going to show you how the enterprise architecture team is trying to address some of those challenges. And once he's finished, then I'll just stand up and wrap up. So Abhinath, if you'd like to come up.
Thanks, Jim. Hi, everyone. In this part of the presentation, I will talk about how we are shaping the IS work program. And in order to do that, I will talk about the framework that we're using, the approach that we have adopted, just give a few examples and just go through some of the tools that we are using. Framework and approach. Well, we think a balanced effort needs to be given to both. Framework is all about addressing the what type of questions. You know, what are we trying to solve? What are the attributes of the current state? What should the attributes of the future state look like? On the other hand, the approach is all about the how type of questions. You know, how do we go about understanding a problem? How do we go about addressing the problem? And we think in order to realize the benefits of enterprise architecture, a balanced effort needs to be given to both. We also believe in a business-led architecture approach. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, we want to start at the business architecture and then work our way down through to the technology architecture rather than go the other way around. The end users of information services are the business units. So it makes sense to actually understand what their requirements are and then, you know, design a solution around it rather than address all the technology concerns and then tell the business that this is how you're meant to operate. We don't want to do that. Architecture artifacts, you know, one of the main reasons that we want to use them is, or it should be used, is it should aid in communication. There is no point of coming up with a really complex technical artifact and handing it to a business unit manager and expecting him to understand or get the message that we are trying to convey. We will still use those complex technical artifacts for our technical stakeholders, but not necessarily for our business unit managers. We also want to keep things simple. You know, we should focus on conveying the message rather than focusing on which models are we using, how many artifacts are we using. We want to keep those numbers down. As a starting point, we have decided to use the TOGAF metamodel. Now, a metamodel is just a concept that kind of determines the different attributes that you model your enterprise on. And we've used this as a starting point because those of you who are aware of TOGAF will no doubt know that this is far from complete. But then again, there is no need to reinvent the wheel. We've used the core content, which are the boxes in white, and the motivation extension, which are the boxes in red. And so what does all this mean? So say for example, you want to understand all the different services. The business services that are provided by a particular organization or a business unit. You would then on the metamodel have a box for an organization unit, and you would have a box for business services, and draw a line between them just to show that a relationship exists. Now, as you can see, there are a lot of lines over here, which means a lot of relationships between all the different boxes. Now, we don't necessarily need all of that. So in the next slide, I want to talk about how we're going about understanding which boxes and which lines do we actually require. So this slide is basically what TOGAF identifies all the different artifacts as. And it's probably not readable from where you are, but the key message here is that, there is a bucket full of artifacts out there, and, TOGAF identifies them either as catalogs, matrices, or diagrams. And we've gone through an exercise where we've considered each of these artifacts and tried to understand, is it required? Is it optional, or do we actually not require it? And in order to do that, we've basically asked ourselves, who are the stakeholders that could use each of these artifacts? What purpose will it actually solve? What type of information do we need to kind of create them? And all of this together tells us or allows us to understand which of those boxes in the meta model do we require, and which relationships do we need. Let me go through this with an example. So I've magnified on a certain section of the previous slide, and let's just say hypothetically, a business unit comes along to information services and asks us that, can you please upgrade the particular version of this enterprise application that we use, so that they can use some of the new features that this system has. So what we might then do is come up with the system organization matrix to kind of see which other organization units or business units out there actually use that system and might be impacted or will be impacted by this upgrade. You know, it might just be that there are 10 other business units in the organization that use that system, which might then raise concerns around the additional licenses costs. It's not just 5 additional licenses that we are talking about anymore. It might be 150 licenses. Some concerns around training requirements. Which business units require what type of training in order to cope up with this new upgrade. Similarly, we would then realize that the other artifacts might be more useful to a solution architect in order to help with their high-level solution design. So we kind of use this activity to understand what artifacts are required by which stakeholders, what purpose does it solve, what information is required to create it, and which in turn helps us to refine our meta model. So what I've talked about so far is what our framework is and how we are going about tailoring it to meet our needs. Now what I want to focus on is what approach have we adopted in order to prioritize all the various initiatives that IS is being bombarded with. So we start off with strategy. Here we try and understand what is Auckland Council trying to do? What is its vision? What are its priorities? We then try and look at the relevant business units and see again, what is their strategy? What is their purpose? The next step is understanding where the pain and opportunities might lie in relation to the initiative that is being proposed. We then analyze how what the benefits are and how well aligned those initiatives are to those benefits. Just because an initiative comes along and says, oh, you can realize these benefits, doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to happen. So we do a little analysis to see whether, how aligned is it to those benefits. We then have a look at what the impact is on the wider organization. Is it just, affecting a small part of the organization, or does it have wider touch points? And we kind of do this in iterations till we get to a point where we understand, where the priority lies with respect to all the other initiatives that we are looking at. We use several tools in order to help us adopt this approach, and I want to spend a little bit of time going through each of these. So let's start with the business motivation model. Well, it's quite a simple tool. It's all about thinking structurally. All the different attributes that motivate a particular business or any organization or business unit is kind of shown here. It talks about vision, objectives, purpose, goals, strategies, etc. And making the business unit think in this manner allows us to kind of capture it in our enterprise architecture repository. And also at the same time, what we've found is a lot of the business units either think about the means or the end. And this tool allows us and them to kind of think about the big picture in terms of what motivates them. We've applied this technique on information services, and what you see on the right of your screen is just a sample of the output that came out of that exercise. And later in the presentation, I'll talk about how we are using these objectives in order to prioritize all the various initiatives. The next the tool that we use is called the target operating model. And the way we use this tool is that we use it to understand the various business units. Where do their pain and opportunities lie? What's working and what's not working for them? So if we start off with, just spend a couple of minutes on this slide. If we start off with customer experience, this is all about understanding which parts of their business unit requires interactions with their customers. Now, by customers, I don't necessarily mean you as a ratepayer, but it could be any external party that is not part of their business unit. And then we ask questions around, what's working and what's not working. The next part is sourcing and alliances. This is all about understanding, which parts of their or which activities of that business unit is performed by them, which activities are performed by the wider organization, and which parts are performed by external parties. Well, functions and processes, it's very critical, and I've got a slide just on focusing on functions. And this is all about understanding, what are the various functions that a business unit performs? What are its high-level processes? And where are the various touch points, and where does handover occur for that particular business unit? Organization and governance is about understanding the organization structure and the governance processes that are in place. And this is critical as it tells us what governance processes might be in place once that particular initiative gets into the implementation phase. Performance metrics is about understanding what the performance measures are and what measurement processes are in place. And what we found is a lot of the business units still need to work on this. And it kind of ties back to one of the challenges Jim was talking about around creating transparency for the organization. It's quite straightforward. Skills and capabilities is about understanding what skills that particular business unit has, and more importantly, where the gaps lie in particular in relation to that particular initiative. Finally, get to technology. It's about understanding what systems do they use, what's the underlying infrastructure, where are the pain points, and what exactly is working for them. Assets and location is about understanding, Jim was talking about Auckland Council looks after $29 billion worth of assets. So for us, it's very important to understand what assets a particular business initiative has. And again, where are they located? We've got over 100 locations, and it's important for us to know where that is in relation to that business unit. So in summary, this tool is kind of used by us to kind of see where, to understand the business, to give them an opportunity to explain their view of the world, and gives us a chance to see where the pain and opportunities might lie. The next tool is investment logic map, and there are a lot of variations to this. On the slide is just one such example. And it's mainly a tracking tool. A lot of the initiatives that come up will say, these are all the benefits that you can realize. These are all the problems that will be solved. And these are all the changes that you need to make. And therefore, this is what we need. This is the amount of investment we need from you. So what this tool allows us to do and allows the business units to do is actually relate them back to each other. What changes will help us address which problems and therefore, realize what benefits. And, kind of doing this exercise allows us to think about which changes will have the biggest impact. It's not, as Jim was saying, it's not always about, oiling the squeaky wheel. And this is one of the tools that we use to understand, which changes will have the biggest impact. So if we get to the functional model. Functional model is all the different things that a council does. And it should be fairly consistent with any other New Zealand local government agency. It has things around managing dog licenses, to managing building consents, to certain back office functions such as managing employees, managing HR. And it's a very simple but yet a very powerful communication tool. For example, we use a functional model and used heat maps to kind of communicate the outputs of a particular risk analysis exercise that we did for an initiative. And you can easily kind of clearly communicate that there are certain functions of the organization that will be at high risk, at moderate risk, and low risk. And then this can then inform your risk management strategies. And the beauty of this, the functional model, is that it can be used in a wide variety of contexts. Not necessarily in just for risk analysis. For example, you can use this to communicate what impact a particular technology will have on the way the council, or on the different things that the council does. And we found that the business understands this kind of a diagram quite easily. So once we go through several iterations and we try and understand and build our case for change, we get to a point where we develop a roadmap. And all a roadmap is just a list of all the initiatives and the associated timelines, which then reflects what the priority of it is. And what I've got here is just a sample roadmap. It's not the Auckland Council's roadmap, but we're kind of using a similar approach. We categorize each initiative into four areas. And stabilization is all about stabilizing underlying infrastructure and your application portfolio. Consolidation is all about consolidating your information and parts of your applications. Transformation is about transforming the business. It might include re-engineering certain business processes. It might include developing new services. And the fourth category is optimization. It's all about, you know, leveraging off your existing investments to improve efficiency and productivity. We've got initiatives all across those four areas, but it would be fair to say that we mainly in the stabilize and consolidate phases at the moment. And this is not where it stops for us. Once we, you know, create the roadmap, if the organization doesn't actually action on it, it's pretty useless. The entire activity becomes useless. So we need to kind of, you know, put an effort into making sure that the business units buy into our roadmap, and which in turn needs to be reflected on their business plans. So what actually drives our investment? I talked about the business motivation model and how we used it to come up with our initiatives, with our objectives. And we kind of use those objectives and test each initiative, each concept against them. The more aligned they are to our objectives, the higher the priority it gets, and vice versa. Well, that's it from me. I will hand back to Jim, who will talk about how we went about establishing architecture and then wrap up the presentation.
Thank you, Abhinath. Okay, so you've got a bit of an understanding of the framework that we've adopted and the approach that we've got. I just thought I'd spend a little bit of time sort of how did we set up architecture at the council. As I said, it was this brand new organization, and we needed to move down this line. We needed to get to that stage where, you know, we were getting to that optimization stage. In fact, the guy who runs our whole team over here, this, what you see is a bit of a picture of our team, has coined a term for it. He's quite a passionate guy, and he's talking really fast, and he wanted to say, you need to be more efficient and productive. And he just said, you need to be more effective. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, everyone talks about, you know, you need to be more effective now. So how did we kind of get here? Well, the first thing you need is you need to have some really good sponsorship, some good executive support in order to get your architecture going forward. And that's what we've got. The leader of this group, Murray Hickey, has managed to gain that executive support. So got high-level support from information services, but also senior business leaders across the organization now see the architecture team as adding some value back. Some of the consultancy work that we've done in the past has actually shown to be effective. So when we come up with some of these tools and frameworks, they're not just poo-pooed away. So getting that executive support was pretty crucial. We have a cohesive team. So what we have been talking about today is primarily enterprise architecture. But the team that we operate in is more than that. What we're trying to do is make sure that we address all the challenges right at the first part of the delivery lifecycle. You know, right from idea, you know, as that project or initiative is developing, we've got all the people that we need. So we've got the enterprise architects, fairly obviously. We're well linked into the solution architects. The enterprise architects may shape the right approach to resolve a particular opportunity or challenge in the business, but it becomes down to the solution architects to actually take that and turn it into an architecture that can be realized and that actually delivers value out. Okay, we're well linked in with the business analysts. When we look at a solution, we're not concentrating on the technology side of it. It is absolutely part of it, but if we don't cover the people and the process as well as the technology, you don't have a solution that actually delivers value back into the business. So the business analysts are an absolutely key part of the team. They really help us identify what the requirements are and help us with that process work that is key to any solution going forward. And we also have the security team. So I touched on that before. We need to have that end-to-end, complete enterprise security view on it. And the only way to do that is really to consider security at the start of your initiative. I'm sure we've all been involved in you know, times where eventually security is thought of right at the end of a project, and it's pretty hard to try to tack on security at the end, or it ends up costing more. So we're trying to make sure that we've got a team that covers all of those things right up front. Some of the other things we did to try to improve our skills was we sort of internally just created a little study group. So what we do is 7 o'clock once a week, we all get together and we spend 2 hours and we learn new techniques, or we go over new models, or we sometimes have some fairly rigorous debates. Anybody who's been involved in architecture knows that some of the debates can be quite strenuous, but it's, you know, we all end up with a sort of common view at the end of it, and we've all learned.
We've even got some people from some of our partners come along, people with many, many years of architecture experience, and it's just a great time to actually pick that up and move forward. Okay, so a couple of the key things. We tried not to invent any wheels. So you saw some of the tools we put up there. We didn't invent any of them. We decided that we were going to use an architecture framework. We chose TOGAF. Yes, we know that TOGAF doesn't answer every question out there, and we're comfortable with that. But if you just looked at that meta model, we're not using all of that meta model yet either. So we're choosing a couple of tools. We went, the target operating model was a concept introduced to us from our IBM partner. You know, they didn't own it, but they introduced it to us. We're trying not to invent any tools over there. So if it exists out there, we'll use COBIT. We'll use ITIL. We'll use TOGAF. Okay? One of the key things was keeping the architecture in-house. Now, that doesn't mean that every single architect needs to be a full-time employee. But what we are saying is that the architecture is going to be governed by our architecture team. So we will get other people in. We may go out to a partner and get them to come and do a piece of architecture for us, and we do that at the moment. But we will maintain it. We'll keep that IP. We may go and get some other partners to do a whole bunch of solutioning work, but as long as we've got the architecture for it, we can make sure that it links into other pieces of work that we need to do around the organization. So we're going to own and govern the end-to-end architecture, as I said, but we're not going to try to do it all ourselves. There's no point in taking the Kiwi 8-wire technology concept too far. There's great partners out there. We use Microsoft, we use HP, we use IBM, we use Deloitte, we use a lot of organizations. Where they can come in and add value, we will absolutely go out and try to get them to come and assist us. Just before I wrap up, because this whole theme of this conference has really been about the cloud, I thought I'd just sort of cover what the architectural view of the cloud is from the Auckland Council's point of view, and then I'll wrap up. So we've got a fairly simple approach to that. We believe that we're an information-centric organization. So anytime we look at any solution, we try to take an information-centric view on it. So one of the business units may come along and say, I want to do such and such as software as a service because, you know, it's right out there. I can turn it on. I can just use it. The way that we evaluate it is say, do we know what the information is? Do we understand our, you know, what the requirements are for us? There's a whole bunch of legislation that applies to a local government organization we've got to comply to. Have we got the right level of control? Have we got the right level of security for it? So sometimes the answer is we have to do it in-house because we need that level of control. Other times we could say, oh, you know, this maybe is a job management system. It's just about tracking a piece of work through a particular business unit. You know, we could do this grand scheme with all of our internal functionality, or we could get something out there on the cloud that business unit can use. We can go and start operating. We know what the risk is. We know what the controls are involved. We know where the information is. We know how to access it. So the processing side of it, we're not too worried about. Every time we look at any solution and whether we have it in-house or you know, out there in the cloud or hosted by a partner or something like that, we just sort of take an information-centric view to it. In fact, one of the key parts of the IS team is a team just around business information. They just concentrate on making sure that we treat our information correctly. Okay, so just to wrap up, just a few messages that I wanted you to take away. Auckland Council is a brand new organization. To a certain extent, it's still going through some teething pains, but we're getting over there. We've got some significant opportunities there. They're no longer problems. They're all opportunities. Anytime an architect looks at something, oh, that's a good opportunity for me. Okay? Enterprise architecture is playing a leading role. One of the largest pieces of work that's just been kicked off is really covering our customer management, rating, regulatory, and property areas. It's going to be a very large multi-year project. That was initiated from within the enterprise architecture team. We're taking the business on the journey. We're looking at the business level first, and then we're going to work down to the technology level. So I suppose the last message is, if you like challenges and if you like opportunities, well, Auckland Council is the place for architects to be. Okay, thank you very much. Abhinath and I will be here at the front.
anyone wants to come and ask us any questions, we'll just be down at the front. And thanks for your attendance.